Welcome to the Mighty Podcast, where we infuse the health space with positivity, humor, and vulnerability. The Mighty is a safe and supportive community here to help you find the people and information you need to navigate your health journey. And we're so excited to spend some time together today. Today's podcast is sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb, or BMS. Now, let's get into what the health we're talking about today, and we're going to be talking about symptomatic obstructive hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, or obstructive HCM, with someone who has lived experience with the condition with support from her daughter. Danny and Cassidy are paid spokespeople on behalf of BMS. So without further ado, my name is Ashley, and I would love to introduce Danny and Cassidy. Welcome, Danny and Cassidy.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thank you for having us.
For sure. I'm excited to hear more about your stories today. So, Danny, can you give a little bit of an introduction about yourself for our listeners?
I am Danny. I'm 58 years old. I've been living with obstructive HCM for about six, seven years. I'm a registered nurse. I have four children. They're all grown. My youngest one is on here with me.
Hi, I'm Cassidy. I am 28 years old. I also was a registered nurse, but I am actually now here in Australia. Yeah, just kind of traveling around. I'm super far away from my mom, which is unfortunate. But yeah, I hope she comes to Australia and comes to see me, the land down under, one day. And yeah, I play rugby out here too.
I love that. I mean, at least you get a little bit of this quality time in this recording, which I know is a little different than in person, but it's something. I want to, before we dive deep into the topic at hand, start with a little icebreaker, get us warmed up for the conversation. So I'll answer the question first. I'll go over to Danny next and then Cassidy. Question that I have for you is, if you could vacation anywhere, no matter the cost, where would it be? So my answer, I was thinking very hard about this because I realized there's a lot of places I've gone that I would love to visit again and be able to like relive some of those memories. But then I have so many places I've never been and I would love to. So I think I settled on the answer of Iceland. I'd love to see like the black sand beaches. I'd love to be able to see the Aurora Borealis. So that is my vacation anywhere destination. What about you, Danny?
Well, Australia, of course.
Very fair, very fair.
For obvious reasons. I don't even have to explain that.
Yeah, I think for me, if I were to go anywhere and not even thinking about cost, I would take a very lavish vacation to Italy and just eat all the bread, all the pasta, and see the Amalfi Coast. Maybe be on a yacht for like a week or something.
I changed mine to hers.
There you go. Just that's kind of in the middle, right? That's kind of meeting in the middle. As much as I know we'd love to go to those places right now, let's jump into our conversation. So, Danny, I'd love to start. Our audience may not be super familiar with obstructive hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. So could you tell us a little bit about the condition?
Hypertrophic cardiomyopathy has different variations. The variation that I have is the obstructive variety. Essentially, the heart's overworked, so it gets enlarged, and so that it doesn't function properly. Also, the muscle fibers in people with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy are, there's too many, and so that's what causes the contractility to kind of go overboard.
Thank you so much for that background. I would really love to get into a little bit about kind of your diagnosis and what that, you know, experience was for you. So just kind of starting at the beginning, like what did a day in your life look like before you started having any symptoms?
Working full time, going to school, going out on weekends. I mean, just I could do everything I wanted to do with no problems. I didn't realize how good life was until I got sick.
I think that's a very like relatable place that a lot of people in our community have talked about. Knowing that, you know, what were those symptoms that you first experienced? You know, what was that kind of first impact?
Shortness of breath was the biggest thing. And it just progressively got worse until I thought I need to go see somebody and find out what's going on.
Yeah, I remember the shortness of breath for sure before she was diagnosed. We were on vacation. And we wouldn't really be walking that far, but she would have to take a break. And honestly, like at the time, it was like, come on, mom, like keep up, you know? And then I look back now after knowing everything that we know, and it was like, those were some very bad symptoms that she was experiencing.
Yeah, was your day-to-day impacted in other ways as well?
The shortness of breath really was the worst, because the worse it got, you would actually look at errands. You would drive into a parking lot and Instead of thinking what you had to get, you would think, am I going to be able to make it from the parking spot into the store? And then once I get in the store, will I be able to even get everything I need? Or will I run out of steam halfway through? So you even start going to smaller stores that are more expensive just because you know you can get in and get out without almost passing out.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, a lot of our community talk about like the accommodations they've had to make for their symptoms and like the ways that it show up. And I think that really speaks to that as well. So you started experiencing these symptoms, your day-to-day was impacting, you're like, all right, I gotta go talk to somebody. So from that point, like what was that journey like actually getting, you know, from that point to the diagnosis?
The diagnosis was a long time coming. I saw several different providers and it took probably about 2 years to get a solid diagnosis. And then from there, you know, surgery. Once I got the diagnosis, then the surgery was fairly quick. But there was a long process. I was told I had left ventricular hypertrophy and just to take some medicine and I would be okay. But something in my gut just told me there's more to it than that. And I just pursued other providers and finally got the correct diagnosis.
Yeah, I remember the journey being very, very long. Countless doctors, procedures, tests, in and out of the hospital. And it took quite a while to get an answer. And then obviously, the number one recommendation at the time was open heart surgery, which is obviously very scary. And it was unexpected. And yeah, it did happen very quickly after diagnosis.
Yeah, and I can imagine after all of that waiting too for the diagnosis and then the very quick change after that, I'm sure like overall, like that must have been such a stressor on you as individuals, on you as a family. So I can understand like how rough that part of the experience had to have been at that time for you all. So I do know that symptomatic obstructive HCM can be passed down in family. So we have a unique experience where we have the family connection we can speak to here. So have you gotten any genetic testing done? Is this something that, you know, Cassidy, you're concerned about in your future?
So I have not had genetic testing done. And a big reason why I decided not to do that at this time is because my mom had genetic testing done and it did come back inconclusive. So I'm kind of thinking that if I did have any gene, it would also come back inconclusive. I definitely feel like I'm more aware and knowledgeable of what symptoms look like. And if I ever were to become symptomatic, you know, that I'd be able to take care of myself and see a physician about it. But at this point in time, I'm not experiencing any symptoms. I did have one echo done a couple of years ago, and it did show, I think, very mild left ventricle enlargement. But other than that, everything came back normal, and I feel healthy and well. So,
great. Anything from your perspective to add to that, Danny?
There's several genes that show up when you have symptomatic obstructive HCM. And there's many that they haven't identified yet. So mine did come back inconclusive.
And I mean, we look at silver linings a little bit, knowing your experience, like your family does know what to look out for. And that is something that you all know what the signs are because you've experienced them. And so, you know, you're in the best position possible if anything were to happen because you have that knowledge, which is just such an important part of, you know, taking care of ourselves. So Danny, so you got this diagnosis. What were your thoughts? What were your feelings after hearing that diagnosis?
At the time, I wasn't familiar with the disease. So of course, you want to gather, do all kinds of research, and you go down a rabbit hole of, you know, learning about the disease. And there's a lot of stuff out there that isn't, you know, accurate. So I tried to not go down a rabbit hole, only read, you know, peer-reviewed articles and not go down Dr. Google. So life-changing diagnosis, right? I mean, so I wanted to do whatever I can to make my chances of, you know, recovering better.
I think when my mom, when she was diagnosed and she found out that she had to have surgery, she was doing lots of research, especially on the physician that was going to be doing the open heart surgery, because she had options of who was going to be operating on her. And, you know, she wanted to be in the best hands. Really amazing at like the advocacy that she has when like working with doctors and like her care in general. Like she knows when something's wrong and she does not leave until it is addressed, which is honestly, it's wonderful. I think knowing obviously because she had the diagnosis and then had the surgery was you know, suggested right after diagnosis. That was scary. So besides like the research part of things and doing what she could that was in control of her, I think there was an immense amount of worry on her part that she wasn't going to make it through surgery for sure.
Yeah, I love hearing about you being able to take that time to do that research. I know you said it was pretty quick, but the fact that you were able to like be instrumental in your own care is something that we hope that patients can do. And so I'm like really, really happy to hear that that's something you did have the opportunity to figure out like who the doctor was and all of that. Because I think that hopefully helped assuage some of those fears going into it as life-changing diagnosis that hits a certain way. It's tricky. So I'd love to know, we're talking about all of this diagnosis, all that's happening and kind of the medical side of things. So how was, you know, your career, your work, how were they affected by, you know, this diagnosis, by these symptoms?
I had gone on leave a couple times before surgery and then after surgery. I had picked a return date where I was cleared to go back to work and everything, went back, couldn't do it. And then I took a leave from nursing school as well because I graduated nursing school after my diagnosis. I was following this development of this drug. I was reading about the clinical trials and I'm like, I have to get on this because after surgery, I felt okay for a time. And I'm like, what are my options now? I mean, I basically thought I'm just not going to be okay forever. And I was following this drug. And as soon as it was FDA approved, I was trying to get on it.
Yeah. And we're going to talk a little bit more about treatment in a minute. And so I definitely want to come back to that conversation. I think the last thing that I want to kind of round out with this, you know, diagnosis conversation is, who did you turn to for support when you're going through all of this?
My kids, Cassidy in particular.
Yeah, kind of talking about the question that you asked before this, like work and school and everything before surgery was difficult. But even after surgery, I remember she had an extremely difficult time. I mean, she felt like she was basically climbing like Mount Everest, trying to meet like these goals of completing, you know, nursing school. And I remember several jobs that she had applied for, got the job, started the job, and then physically could not walk from the parking lot to inside of the building without being extremely short of breath. And I remember her calling me being like, there's just no way that I can do this. And it's terrible to have an obstacle such as that blocking you from things that you want to do. And I think as a support person for her, especially being obviously 8,000 miles plus away here in Australia, I think the number one thing, listening and hearing her out, everything is very real and everything is very valid. And I think even before the diagnosis, when she would have shortness of breath, be like, Mom, no, you just have to work out. Like, you need to go to the gym more. You need to like eat better food, you know, get more sunlight, drink more water. And obviously, I just didn't have the knowledge at the time that we have now. And also listening to other people's stories about this condition has helped open my mind so much about what someone can go through. And yeah, just really give her a listening ear and encourage as much as I can.
And you kind of answered my last question for this section, but if there's anything else you would want to expand upon, what that support and advocacy looked like for you kind of through this whole process.
Yeah, I would say because I've pretty much always have lived out of the state of Minnesota. Well, in the last 3 years, I've lived out of state, so I've always been far away from my mom. I would say the number one thing that I could do for support is definitely listening. And also really pushing her to, not that I actually really have to do this because she's such a great advocate on her own, but yeah, just kind of validating all of her feelings. You know, I know something's wrong and it's like, yeah, like if you think something's wrong, like I 100% believe you and you need to make sure that that is communicated to your providers. And really just, yeah, supporting her, backing her up 100%. Lots of phone calls, lots of FaceTiming, and also being able to be here with her. And I love that. We always have a great time together doing things like this.
I love that. So I like that you talked about validating your mom's experience, because I think that is such an important piece of it. It might not seem like direct advocacy, but like, you know, it's hard going through the experience of getting a new condition and having to navigate it. You said, Danny, earlier on that like you were told it was one thing, but you had that gut, like that validation of your gut feeling is really powerful because you know your body the best. And so Cassidy confirming that just helps you get the best care in the long run. So I think that's such a great, you know, piece of that support that you provide Cassidy. And with that, I would love to swap over into our next section, talk a little bit about the treatment experience. So Danny, what did that treatment journey look like, you know, after you got your diagnosis? I know we started to touch on it a little bit, but could you kind of give us an outline of what that looked like?
So initially, my treatment was open heart surgery. It's not a cure for symptomatic obstructive HCM. However, it does reduce the symptoms for most people. It didn't work for me. It worked initially for a couple months and then slowly but surely going right back to square one. I went back and had further testing done and my obstruction had returned and it was even worse than when I was initially diagnosed. So we were trying different medication combinations and I was tracking Camzyos, Mavacamten. I was watching the trials and I was like, I gotta get my hands on this drug the minute it comes out.
Let's take a short break to share a little bit more about Camzyos. Indication. Camzyos, Mavacamten, is a prescription medicine used to treat adults with symptomatic obstructive hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, HCM. Camzyos may improve your symptoms and your ability to be active. It is not known if Camzyos is safe and effective in children. Camzyos may cause serious side effects, including heart failure, a condition where the heart cannot pump with enough force. Heart failure is a serious condition that can lead to death. You must have echocardiograms before you take your first dose and during your treatment with Camzyos to help your healthcare provider understand how your heart is responding to Camzyos. People who develop a serious infection or irregular heartbeat have a greater risk of heart failure during treatment with Camzyos. Tell your healthcare provider or get medical help right away if you develop new or worsening shortness of breath, chest pain, fatigue, swelling in your legs, a racing sensation in your heart, palpitations, or rapid weight gain. The risk of heart failure is also increased when Camzyos is taken with certain other medicines. Tell your healthcare provider about the medicines you take, both prescribed and obtained over the counter, before and during treatment with Camzyos. Because of the serious risk of heart failure, Camzyos is only available through a restricted program called the Camzyos Risk Evaluation and Mitigation Strategy, REMS program. Your healthcare provider must be enrolled in the Camzyos REMS program in order for you to be prescribed Camzyos. Before you take Camzyos, you must enroll in the Camzyos REMS program. Talk to your healthcare provider about how to enroll in the Camzyos REMS program. You will be given information about the program when you enroll. Before you take Camzyos, your healthcare provider and pharmacist will make sure you understand how to take Camzyos safely, which will include returning for echocardiograms when advised by your healthcare provider. Camzyos can only be dispensed by a certified pharmacy that participates in the Camzyos REMS program. Your healthcare provider can give you information on how to find a certified pharmacy. You will not be able to get Camzyos at a local pharmacy. If you have questions about the Camzyos REMS program, ask your healthcare provider. Go to www.camzyosrems.com or call 1-833-628-7367. Camzyos Mavacamten REMS program. Learn more about Camzyos Risk Evaluation and Mitigation Strategy, REMS, including how to get certified and how to manage your REMS tasks online. Please see additional important safety information below and U.S. full prescribing information, including boxed warning and medication guide, linked on the episode landing page on themighty.com. And I have a question here, which I'm pretty sure I already know the answer to, about if you were hesitant at all to try this treatment.
No, because I knew, you know, there's risk. But I also knew that if I don't take the risk that I'm going to be sedentary, everything is a struggle. And I don't know, I somehow knew in my heart that this drug was going to work for me. I just knew it. And it has.
Yeah. So on that, I would actually love to know, like, which of your symptomatic obstructive HCM symptoms have changed since starting Camzyos?
Since taking Camzyos, my symptoms have been improving and things have changed for the better. I'm able to do more activities than I did before, including going on longer walks. I have a lot more energy, which has allowed me to go back to work as a nurse. And I've been able to travel, which is something that I hadn't done for years. So that's been awesome. Knowing I can travel again and visit my family again whenever I want, That's a significant change for me. Camzyos is not a cure. I still have obstructive HCM. And when I started on Camzyos, I did experience some symptoms, including dizziness. However, I am glad that I'm feeling so much better.
I was on the phone with my mom when she took her first dose because it was kind of like a moment of, oh my gosh, it's here. I finally have it. I've worked so hard to get it in my hands. And yeah, it was definitely just like a little moment for us.
That just melted my heart to hear. That's just so special. I love that. So I guess the question I have for you is, how do you feel now?
I feel like I used to feel. I feel like I don't view going to the store as how close do I have to park to the grocery store? Am I going to get in there? And I mean, I can work. I can travel. It's really something.
I would say if I were to compare how she was before starting Camzyos to being on Camzyos now for a little while, one, obviously the symptoms have lessened. And she also would call me. She'd be able to walk up a flight of stairs and she'd call me and she'd be like, I just walked up a flight of stairs and I did not get short of breath at all, which was phenomenal. When you're not feeling well and you're tired all the time and you can't walk distances, it's hard to go on outings with friends. You know, when you're always feeling miserable, it's hard to make relationships with people. You know, and now that she's feeling so much better, she's able to travel. Like, she just went on a cruise with a friend. She was able to walk around, you know, the entire ship, and she was able to see different islands. And, you know, she didn't have to worry about, oh my gosh, am I going to feel super sick today where I'm not going to be able to do anything, or am I going to be able to walk? Like, that wasn't even a thought in her mind. Like, she was just enjoying herself.
I love that. So I guess my question now is to follow that. Like, how does symptomatic obstructive HCM play a role in your life today?
I know it's there and I know that I'm not cured. I still have the disease, but it's managed. There's advances in science all the time. This handles the symptoms. Maybe someday there'll be a cure.
So with that, you know, with being on Camzyos, with, you know, doing everything you're doing, how often do you see your doctor today? What's that relationship like?
I have to have an echo every 3 months at this point in treatment. So initially it's every 30 days. And then after a certain amount of time, it's every 3 months.
And I would love to know, Cassidy, how on your end does support today look different than it did, you know, while going through that diagnosis journey, while figuring out the treatments?
I mean, of course, I still showed up in the same ways that I do now, which is really just trying to talk to her and give that, you know, support through FaceTime. But it was definitely difficult at first. There was a lot of sadness and a lot of feeling like there was no light at the end of the tunnel, which is very sad because, I mean, there's nothing I could do besides, you know, letting her vent and me telling her that it was going to be okay. Now, I think support is more so like celebrating in her successes, you know, of being able to go up a flight of stairs. I was in shortness of breath and being able to celebrate with her for that.
I love that. And I think you touched on this a little bit earlier as well, but you know, you live in Australia now.
I do.
Danny, you live stateside. How does that time zone difference affect that?
It works out okay. Early in the morning or later in the evening, we're still up at the same time.
Yeah. So my early morning is her evening. So right now it's almost 9 in the morning my time, and your time I think it's like 6 p.m. There's definitely still a lot of time while we're both still awake to talk. You know, I think we talk at least minimum once a day still. I mean, it's been that way for a while.
Video call. So I see her every day on the phone. We have this app that I follow her on called Life 360. So it tells you where she is. So I hate it because I log in and it'll say, Cassidy is 8,937 miles from you. Like, I'm not going on this thing anymore.
See, for me, I don't feel like I'm that far away. Like, it does not feel like I'm, you know, almost 9,000 miles away. It really doesn't. I've had one moment where I'm like, man, it feels like I'm the other side of the world. But for the most part, I don't feel like I'm super far away. I think my mom would disagree. She's like, it absolutely feels like you're on the other side of the world.
Yeah, it does.
I have that experience as well from my mother when I moved away from home.
Oh, okay.
It was that same vibe. Totally get that. And I think, you know, we live in the age of the internet, which is really great for being able to still stay connected. So it does feel like you are closer than you physically are. So
thank goodness. I don't know what I would do if I couldn't see her.
Lots of letters.
Yes.
Lots of mail.
Yeah, you go lots of mail and get like the Polaroid camera and you can send a picture every time.
Yeah.
So Danny, have you built any community with or, you know others who share that condition with you?
Yes. We went to an event that was centered around people with symptomatic obstructive HCM. And I'm still talking. We have like a group on Facebook. And then there's another kind of like patient advocacy group that I've met several people on. They have a group on Facebook as well. And I've gotten to know several people that way.
And I think when people are first diagnosed, or when my mom, especially when she was first diagnosed with this disease, there was a lot of loneliness and feeling like no one else is experiencing what I'm experiencing. And so I think being given that opportunity and having these advocacy groups available to her has helped immensely. And knowing that she is absolutely not alone, there are other people who experienced the same thing.
Yeah, it's great.
That's exactly what we're trying to do on The Mighty as well. So I love that you have that type of community support because it is just so incredible to have and so powerful.
It is. It really is.
So my last question for you is, you know, what, if anything, have you gained on this journey beyond, you know, the actual physical treatment of Camzyos?
Oh, I think just a lot of wisdom about life in general. Never take anything for granted and don't sweat the small stuff. And just appreciate everything. I don't know, once you've been pretty sick, you have a whole different lens on the world, you know? And you're just extra thankful for small things. Feeling good is not a small thing, but I mean, it's a huge thing. It just puts everything in perspective. Like, money doesn't really matter. Because if you don't feel good, you can have all the money in the world, and it's not going to matter.
That's a great answer, because I think too, like something we talk a lot about in the Mighty community is like we celebrate the, you know, quote unquote small wins, because somebody who is dealing with chronic fatigue, maybe getting out of bed that day is their win, and that's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you so much, both of you, for sharing that personal experience. It's something that I like to say a lot, but like, even if you've talked about your journey a million times, it is still something that you're being vulnerable and doing and being so open and authentic. And, you know, myself and our community really just appreciate that vulnerability. So moving into some of our last sections here of the podcast, we like to go into self-care corner where we ask about, you know, what self-care practices have you been trying or have been helping you recently? So we can do the same order that we did at the top. So I can answer the question first, go to you, Danny, and then to you, Cassidy. So for me, I would say I have been trying to just keep myself accountable more, in all honesty, and it's been really good self-care for me because it's being accountable to my relationship and being accountable to my own health and being accountable to my needs has been a really important thing in helping me feel really good about myself. And so I've just been making myself be accountable, and it's been in such surprising ways that has been such a self-care practice for me. What about you, Danny?
I like that. My self-care is more physical. Like, I like to try to build my immune system.
I think self-care for me, being in Australia and coming here not knowing anybody, has been just like really making sure I get out of my comfort zone and being like putting myself in social situations. Playing rugby for several different rugby teams, kind of always saying yes to new people that I meet. And that's been wonderful. I've already made many friends. That part of self-care for me has been extremely fulfilling. And it's made my almost 2 months here phenomenal. It's been amazing.
Wow. I didn't realize that's how recent it was. And to have all of that's incredible. That's I'm very impressed.
It's been great. And the people here are lovely. And they're from all over the world. And they just love meeting new people. And they're just so warm and welcoming. And
I'm going to have to find out who they are and tell them to be mean So she comes home.
I know, I did tell my mom. I was like, I am not sure when I'll be coming home, and it might be a little bit later than I originally planned. She was like, 6 months, right? I was like, maybe like 2 years. I don't know.
At least it's a good reason, right? At least it's because you're enjoying it so much. So I'd love to get into our next question. So here at The Mighty, we kind of like to use it as a verb sometimes, but really talking about, you know, when we think about The Mighty, we think about feeling empowered, whether that's about your health or, you know, your symptoms, whatever that looks like. So I'm going to ask this question. We can go in the same order again, but what made you feel mighty this week or recently? So for me, I spoke up a lot this week for my needs, and it was really hard because I was speaking up to family, and I obviously didn't get the full reaction that I wanted with setting boundaries, but I did make that clear, and that made me feel really good after the, you know, stress of setting a boundary. But I'm very glad I've done it because it's not been something that I've been able to do in the past. So that made me feel mighty this week. What about you, Danny?
What made me feel mighty was all the steps I'm getting in that I could have never gotten in before.
I'm going to kind of answer my mom's question a little bit too, because I feel like my mom had a mighty moment earlier this week where she was at work and she's just like a very big advocate. And I think she knows how to be an advocate for herself. So she's a very good advocate for others. So her and I were talking about work, and I don't know, it made me think about that, that I think that that was like a mighty moment for you, mom, to advocate for other people that you work with. And then a mighty moment for me this week, I joined another rugby team, and it was my first practice with them on Wednesday, and it was so much fun. I had a great time, and it was lovely, and I'm actually super excited to go again next week. And we played touch rugby. It's super fun, and it's on the beach in Manly in Australia. It's phenomenal. It's gorgeous. And yeah, it was a great time, and I felt really mighty.
Danny, what advice would you give to those who in the symptomatic obstructive hypertrophic cardiomyopathy community when advocating for themselves with their doctors?
You have to be persistent. Keep calling and just be your own advocate. You really have to. Even if you're uncomfortable with it, you have to.
I think one piece of advice that I would give to caregivers or like a support system, you know, trying to support other people with obstructive symptomatic hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, is to really listen to the symptoms that they are experiencing. Like I said earlier, at the beginning, you know, when she was having symptoms, but we didn't have a diagnosis, it was, oh, you need to work out. Oh, you need to go on a diet. Oh, you need, you know, drink more water. No, like it is 100% the symptom, and you have to believe that they are not lazy. It's not that they aren't interested in pursuing goals and or anything like that. It is 100% the disease. And I think that's the number one thing for sure, is just listening to the symptoms.
Thank you both so much for that advice specifically, but just in general, thank you for being here today. Thank you for sharing this story. Thank you for being so open.
You're welcome. Our pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Mighty Podcast. Please stay tuned for some important safety information about Camzyos. And thank you to Bristol-Myers Squibb for sponsoring this episode. Additionally, thanks to Danny and Cassidy for sharing their story. Danny and Cassidy have been compensated on behalf of BMS for their participation in this program. If you want to continue this conversation, head over to themighty.com or download the Mighty app to become part of our community. We'd love for you to follow us and give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Or if you're listening on The Mighty, give this page a heart. Join us on our next episode and stay mighty. Important safety information. Camzyos, mavacamten, may cause serious side effects, including heart failure, a condition where the heart cannot pump with enough force. Heart failure is a serious condition that can lead to death. You must have echocardiograms before you take your first dose and during your treatment with Camzyos to help your healthcare provider understand how your heart is responding to Camzyos. People who develop a serious infection or irregular heartbeat have a greater risk of heart failure during treatment with Camzyos. Tell your healthcare provider or get medical help right away if you develop new or worsening shortness of breath, chest pain, fatigue, swelling in your legs, a racing sensation in your heart, palpitations, or rapid weight gain. The risk of heart failure is also increased when Camzyos is taken with certain other medications. Tell your healthcare provider about the medicines you take, both prescribed and obtained over-the-counter, before and during treatment with Camzyos. Because of the serious risk of heart failure, Camzyos is only available through a restricted program called the Camzyos Risk Evaluation and Mitigation Strategy, REMS, program. Your healthcare provider must be enrolled in the Camzyos REMS program in order for you to be prescribed Camzyos. Before you take Camzyos, you must enroll in the Camzyos REMS program. Talk to your healthcare provider about how to enroll in the Camzyos REMS program. You will be given information about the program when you enroll. Before you take Camzyos, your healthcare provider and pharmacist will make sure you understand how to take Camzyos safely, which will include returning for echocardiograms when advised by your healthcare provider. Camzyos can only be dispensed by a certified pharmacy that participates in the Camzyos REMS program. Your healthcare provider can give you information on how to find a certified pharmacy. You will not be able to get Camzyos at a local pharmacy. If you have questions about the Camzyos REMS program, ask your healthcare provider, visit www.camzyosrems.com or call 1-833-628-7367. Before you take Camzyos, tell your healthcare provider about all of your medical conditions, including if you are pregnant or plan to become pregnant. Camzyos may harm your unborn baby. Tell your healthcare provider right away if you become pregnant or think you may be pregnant during treatment with Camzyos. You may also report your pregnancy by calling Bristol Myers Squibb at 1-800-721-5072 or www.bms.com. If you are a female and able to become pregnant, your healthcare provider will do a pregnancy test before you start treatment with Camzyos. You should use effective birth control contraception during treatment with Camzyos and for 4 months after your last dose of Camzyos. Camzyos may reduce how well hormonal birth control works. Talk to your healthcare provider about the use of effective forms of birth control during treatment with Camzyos. Are breastfeeding or plan to breastfeed? It is not known if Camzyos passes into your breast milk. Talk to your healthcare provider about the best way to feed your baby if you take Camzyos. Before and during Camzyos treatment, tell your healthcare provider about all the medicines you take, including prescription and over-the-counter medicines, vitamins, and herbal supplements. Taking Camzyos with certain medicines or grapefruit juice may cause heart failure. Do not stop or change the dose of a medicine or start a new medicine without telling your healthcare provider. Especially tell your healthcare provider if you take over-the-counter medications such as omeprazole, for example, Prilosec, esomeprazole, for example, Nexium, or cimetidine, for example, Tagamet. Take other medications to treat your obstructive HCM disease, develop an infection. How should I take Camzyos? Take Camzyos exactly as your healthcare provider tells you to take it. Do not change your dose of Camzyos without talking to your healthcare provider first. Take Camzyos one time a day. Swallow the capsule whole. Do not break, open, or chew the capsule. If you miss a dose of Camzyos, take it as soon as possible and take your next dose at your regularly scheduled time the next day. Do not take two doses on the same day to make up for a missed dose. Your healthcare provider may change your dose, temporarily stop, or permanently stop your treatment with Camzyos if you have certain side effects. If you take too much Camzyos, call your healthcare provider or go to the nearest hospital emergency room right away. Possible side effects of Camzyos. Camzyos may cause serious side effects, including heart failure, a condition where the heart cannot pump with enough force. The most common side effects of Camzyos include dizziness and fainting, syncope. These are not all of the possible side effects of Camzyos. Call your doctor for medical advice about side effects. You may report side effects to FDA at 1-800-FDA-1088. You may also report side effects to Bristol-Myers Squibb at 1-800-721-5072. Please see U.S. full prescribing information, including boxed warning and medication guide. Indication. Camzyos mavacamten is a prescription medicine used to treat adults with symptomatic obstructive hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, HCM. Camzyos may improve your symptoms and your ability to be active. It is not known if Camzyos is safe and effective in children. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Mighty Podcast, and thank you to Bristol Myers Squibb for sponsoring this episode. Join us on our next episode and stay mighty.